Gamertag Radio listeners, this is Paris, and I just want to remind you guys to check out our survey over at playitsurvey.com. Go over there. It'll take you a few minutes to fill it out. It'll really help out the show. It'll help us with future projects and just things that we have coming up, events, everything. So go to playitsurvey.com. It'll be a few minutes of your time, and it'll be a big help to Gamertag Radio.
Podcasting since 2005. You are listening to Gamertag Radio with your hosts Godfrey, Pete Rock, Paris, Pasta.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio episode 559. This is your host Danny, aka Godfrey, and of course we have the whole crew joining us this week. Let's start with Patrick. Patrick, what's up?
What's up, Danny? How you doing tonight?
Everything is good, man. Everything is good. Good. Just hype. We have a pretty cool special guest coming up later this week, and I'm excited for that. It's going to be fun.
We can announce that soon. Yeah, I'm actually a big fan of the guy's work, so it'll be exciting to hear what he has to say about the state of the industry. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Definitely. And also, we have Paris joining us. Paris.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? My son literally delivered an ice cream sandwich to me, so if I go on mute for a while, you know why.
So you're gonna be a happy man tonight. That's good. And he's finally eating, folks.
Doubt it. I'll still be grumpy, I'm sure.
All right. And just also joining us. What's up?
No, what I was happened? Just gonna say, just as nameless Ubisoft employee on Twitter, I'm still gonna be angry.
And also we have Pete in the house. Pete. Pete, are you there?
Oh, he got the mute ninja got him.
They got him. Ubisoft.
No, I'm actually here. I as soon as I said it, my hand hit the mute button on my headset, and
wow. Only Pete.
It recorded
only
though. Pete. Fine. So you just mute everybody else's audio. They'll never know.
Yeah, it's okay. So what's up, Pete? How's everything, man?
I'm doing good. It's been a stressful week, but I got some dope comics coming in. So hopefully that will allay some of my fears, and I'm looking forward to talk about some of the subject matter we got for tonight's show. It's going to be a pretty interesting show.
Awesome, man. Awesome. So listeners, head over to gamertagradio.com or play.it/gamertag. Listen to our past episodes and make sure to share with your friends. You could also find us on iTunes, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and other podcast directories. You could give us a call, 786-273-7GTR. That's 786-273-7GTR. Email us fanmail@gamertaggrader.com. Remember to send us emails so we could create a whole episode just strictly fan mail. So it's up to you. Keep it up. Send a lot of content that we'll definitely talk about on the show. Let's talk about this, man. There's been a lot of rumors. There's a lot of rumors going around because, you know, E3 is coming up. So, of course, there's always going to be leaks, things that are fake, things that might be true. And here's one article that's been going around now. They're saying that this new Nintendo NX, obviously this one is going to be more powerful than the PlayStation 4. There's a lot of rumors going around about this. And also they're saying that Nintendo is also working on 4 Wii U ports that's going to be also available for the Nintendo NX, which I think is pretty smart move for them. There's a lot of people that still haven't played games like Smash Brothers, Super Mario Maker, Splatoon, maybe Mario Kart. They could easily port that to the NX, and I think it'll be great. But the thing that got my attention the most is that this system is going to be more powerful than the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. I mean, what are your thoughts, man? Because we've been talking about this for a very long time, that a lot of people would like to see this.
It's shocking. I mean, at this point, what price point are we looking at for Nintendo hardware?
Why is it shocking? Of all the news that you've been hearing in the past 6 months about PlayStation 4K, about an upgraded Xbox One, you know Nintendo is coming out with a new system this year. Why would they purposely make it less powerful under the hood than their current competition. That wouldn't make sense.
They've done it twice, Paris. They've done it twice with the Wii and the Wii U. What's the difference?
The Wii U, when it came out, was more powerful than the 360 and the PlayStation 3. That's my point.
They've been getting too much negative press as a result of having underpowered equipment for the last two Nintendo console generations. Obviously, they don't follow the same one where they stick to the same 10-year plan. They kind of have they go by their own song and dance. But I don't know. I have to side with Paris. It's gonna be one of them few times where him and I are gonna have to agree on that. It might just be, and I'm gonna call it now, it just might be a make or break for Nintendo. I know that sounds almost like a foolish statement.
I really doubt it, but go ahead.
For a major console, I'm not saying handhelds, because they have the handheld console market on lock. But from a living room console or a bedroom console experience perspective, mm-hmm. they've been overshadowed by both Microsoft and Sony, and now PC with the Steam machines and being able to play, in your living room with a PC and not necessarily not requiring a console. I mean, the whole UWP platform has lately come in to bite Microsoft in the butt. I'm sure they're already working on a fix to get all that, but I don't think this is the right time for Nintendo to do this. If they don't do something, it's going to be bad. It's Nintendo's not accustomed to failure, and for them to have this last console, I don't know. In my personal opinion, I still don't think it was a success, although sales may differ and people's opinions are, their own opinions. They need to come big with something that's going to stay or stick around technology-wise for the next couple of years, as opposed to being late as soon as they hit the market.
I agree 100%.
Do you guys expect to have the Wii U library quickly, or do you think it'll come out piece by piece? Because obviously the big titles will be ported over, but some of the less bigger titles like Bayonetta 2, do you think we'll get those eventually? Because I would like to see a heavy push from them, maybe even digital only, to save on manufacturing cost. Because the Wii U library is attractive, but to me and other people, it was not enough to get me over the hump to get a Wii U. But I'm on board with the NX at this point, theoretically, given what I know about the system so far. So I'm curious, for you guys, are you looking forward? Do you think the Wii U games are needed at launch? Or do you think Nintendo is going to have games set up to succeed at launch that are not required as Wii U ports?
I think both. I think that maybe release them slowly, but also get the gamers excited. Show that they are going to be releasing exclusive games that was made for the NX. If you just release a bunch of ports, I think that's not enough to actually get people to buy the system. So by them releasing, like Zelda and other exclusive games at launch, I think that'll be a perfect thing for them.
So you don't think it'll be backwards compatible?
Yes, it will. I think it might be. Yeah, they have to. That's more library for them. But I'm talking about ports, like let's say Mario Kart. You want to get a better version that looks better on NX? Play it. Or if you want, play the Wii U version. It's just not going to look it's not going to look graphically better than the NX. And also have it available, certain games that have online features. Let's say I get the new version for the NX of Mario Kart. I could also play with my cousins that they don't have the NX. They only have the Wii U, but I could play with them online too. I think that would be perfect, like a cross online thing.
I don't know.
Paris, go ahead, Pete.
Okay. I kind of think that they'll do the ports, but not in a remaster type situation. I think because of the library that they have, and they don't have to be concerned with amazing graphical content, it's not going to be as difficult. Now, again, we don't know what the actual internals are on the NX. Everybody's still, you know, hoping that they're guessing what the right stuff is. But if they do something similar to what Microsoft is doing with like an enumerated or virtual emulator sitting in the background that plays these older different types of games, you know, that is the Nintendo, you know, the Nintendo library. I absolutely think a backwards compatibility type concept could be possible. Now, will they do what a lot of people are doing now, which is giving, you know, which is reselling content that people may already have? We don't know if it's going to have a disc drive or not. That's still up in the air, and people are still, you know, questioning whether they do or not. Do they go all digital? Then do they do what Sony does and force people to rebuy games that may potentially people already have on Wii U?
They've done it many times. But I think here's the thing that I would like to see a big change from Nintendo. Create a system that will also allow to have a feature like similar to EA Access, where gamers could pay a certain amount every month and they'll get all types of content, all type of old games from way back from Nintendo to maybe Nintendo 64, even GameCube games, by them paying a monthly price. I think that would be great. That would be like similar to what EA Access have right now. Release games every month like that. I think that also will help Nintendo too. Something new that Microsoft and Sony, they're not doing that at all.
Mm-hmm.
For them to think outside of the box, I think that would be great because they have the library more than both companies.
Absolutely. But here's the question is, you know, how slowly do they release it? Piece by piece? You go console by console? If we want to go a step further, because hoping that the online system for the NX will be something spectacular to keep up with their competition, I would almost like to see some kind of system where, you know, if they do eventually go the route of charging for online, that should be the same cost as that accessibility to their back catalog of games. That should be one and the same. That's what things PlayStation did not get right with PlayStation Now, was not combining that into PS Plus. I think Nintendo has a huge opportunity to capitalize on that market because a lot of people will be willing to pay to access those games. But then the question is, you know, how long do you have to wait for your favorite game? What's the selection process yet? Like, so a lot of questions right now, but the possibility is there. I just hope Nintendo understands what they have in their field right now.
Well, I'll say this. I don't agree with any of what you guys just said, but you know, I don't want to really debate it too much. I just don't see Nintendo. I don't see Nintendo creating this pay system to get backwards compatible games, because either they're just going to say, all right, Wii U games, since Wii U was not such a great success, we're going to allow all those games on the NX system and we'll just keep moving forward. But the back catalog beyond that, they're not changing that system. No freaking way, because they're making money. The way it currently is, people are spending hard-earned cash to buy digital copies of these old games. And why would they change that business model? It makes no sense to me. I could see it for the Wii U, like I said, to just say, all right, if you got Wii U games already, we'll bring them forward on the disc or digital if you already own them. But beyond that, I don't see them all of a sudden opening up the N64 catalog, so to speak, you know, on some kind of subscription service, because they got people actively paying for these games. And then look at the Zelda series right now, just for an example. They're doing the remakes. They're making so much money off of that too. People are running out and buying those. Look, we just saw the MPDs. Wasn't Twilight Princess in the top 10, the remake?
Yeah.
They're not giving that cash cow up. No way. I don't see it, in my opinion.
I'm talking about like maybe certain games that could do that. I'm not saying to release every catalog and pay $9.99 a month and that's it. No, I'm talking about like have a certain amount of games available per month and pay a certain amount. Pay like 10 bucks a month. I think they could do that. And the reason why I'm saying that too, Paris, is because this is an easier way for them to say, we got this for our system. Nobody else has it. And our competition are not doing it at all. Tell me a reason besides that's more powerful than the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Show me new features. Show me new things that is going to make me and other gamers be like, oh, you know what? I'm going to spend a certain amount of dollars to buy that console.
Well, I think the biggest thing that they can do to get people to come back to a Nintendo console and actively use it as their number one gaming device is going to be getting third party back. That's the biggest thing. So you're saying Nintendo needs to show us. I think they need to show the EAs and the Ubisofts and the 2Ks of the world why they should start putting their games back on their system again. I think that's the bigger thing. You know,
no, you're right.
You know, we talked about it a little bit last week or the week before, I can't remember, but you know, Nintendo first party, they're going to be fine. They always are, no matter what they decide to do, because they make great content. But to get the mass market to somewhat compete with Xbox and PlayStation, they got to get third party back, because that's where the vast majority of gamers are these days.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's go straight to our sponsor. You know, if you guys, you know, speaking up on Nintendo NX, you know, later this year, hopefully it's going to be coming out during the holidays. Hey, you need some extra money? I think this is a great way for you to drive with Uber. Uber's a smartphone app that connects with riders, with drivers. So as a driver, it will help you to make some extra money driving your own car. And you could do this in your own time. You don't have to quit your day job to make more money. Whenever you need to make extra money, just turn on the app and drive. And you could do it here and there. And it all adds up. And it's super fast and really, really easy. This is what you have to do. Go to drivewithuber.com and sign up for free. And you could do it right now while listening to Gamertag Radio. Answer a couple basic questions about tuning your car and then get approved. And start driving. That's it. It's super, super easy. So if you want to start driving with Uber, and you want to make some extra cash on your schedule, sign up to Drive with Uber today. Go to drivewithuber.com. That's drivewithuber.com.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
I believe Paris has been playing a game already, like in a couple of days now, for the PlayStation 4. Tell us a little bit about that, Paris.
Well, I've been playing Ratchet and Clank, and just want to thank PlayStation for sending me over a review copy of that. It's not like a full review or anything. This is just early impressions. Because like you said, I got this copy literally on launch day on Tuesday, and we're recording this on Thursday. But let me tell you something. My first impression was hitting that power button on PlayStation 4 and it powering up and loading in a Ratchet and Clank. And I said, my God, this looks like a Pixar movie. And then I actually got to pick up the controller and started moving Ratchet around. And I go, my God, I'm controlling a Pixar movie. This is easily one of the best looking, and forget PC, it doesn't matter the platform. This is one of the best looking video games I've ever seen, period.
Wow. Big words.
It is big words. And I cannot say how impressed I am with what Insomniac has done with this game. Just the level of detail, the lighting, just the environments, everything so far has been fantastic with it. And, you know, just a quick little backdrop on it. This is, and it's a joke because Quark is kind of telling the story throughout the game. This is the game inspired by the movie that was inspired by the game. And that's kind of the running joke as they go along. So this is kind of like a quasi remake of the original Ratchet and Clank that was on the PlayStation 2. And the story follows similar paths, but it diverts because you're kind of getting it from Quark's point of view. So it's, you know, obviously Insomniac with the comedy and everything, it's very there. It's very, very lighthearted, very, very easygoing game. It's just a lot of fun. I found myself laughing a lot so far. And the biggest thing is that it reminded me of is it's a platformer. And It almost seems like that's a dying breed now in this generation. I know we had a game like Ori and the Blind Forest, things like that, but there's not a lot of great, quote unquote, AAA platformers out there right now. Hopefully we'll see some here in the next year or so on other platforms. But Ratchet and Clank itself, like I said, it's just a beautiful game. You know, the weapon, and again, Insomniac is known for this with the Ratchet and Clank series. The weapon variety is great. Just everything about it is fantastic. And it's only $40.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. When I saw that, I was like, really? They're only charging $40 for this. This, honestly, I would have threw $60 at this without a problem. So, like I said, this isn't a review. These are early impressions because I've not finished the game. I'm probably about a good 25% into it. But by next week, I'll have it done. And excuse me, I'll try and go ahead and just give a full review on it. But I'll just say, just for first impressions, if you were curious about this, it's definitely something to keep your eye on and check out. And I'll say this. If these are the type of graphics and things that we're getting from the PlayStation 4, it does make you second guess why they want to do a PlayStation 4 4K. Because I'm telling you guys, it is like I'm control. It's like they made Pixar made Ratchet and Clank movie. And then they're just like, well, you know what? We're just going to let you use the controller around too. That's what it is. It looks that good. And it's funny because if you watch the commercials for the Ratchet and Clank movie, it doesn't look as good as the game.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
Are you just trying to go for play it quotes on Twitter now?
Yes, I am. That's my new goal. That's my new goal now. I want play it to quote me on Twitter. That's it. No, Jesus, I'm being dead serious. If you go watch the commercial and then you play the game, it doesn't look as good.
Paris, did you play the original Ratchet and Clank on PS2?
I did not. The first Ratchet and Clank I ever played was the first one on the PlayStation 3. That's the first Ratchet I ever played. Yeah,
gotcha. I barely touched the series at all, so I was wondering, like, how similar this new one is to the original game.
No, I just know, obviously, from all the PR stuff that they sent me, that this is a reimagining of the original one. But, like I said, Quark is telling the story, so you know it's not going to be one for one for what it originally was. But it's good so far. It's definitely good. Like I said, it's laugh out loud funny with a lot of the stuff. And
great, you need more games with comedy in them. That's awesome.
Yeah, we do. We absolutely need more games like this. I mean, not everything needs to be in the dark zone, so to speak, you know, taking a Division reference. Everything doesn't need to be gritty and your, you know, blood and all that stuff. Sometimes it's nice to have a lighthearted game with, Patrick, a good story.
Oh my God.
I had to do it. No, but I'm enjoying it. I really am. Like, so hopefully I'll have more to talk about next week.
Oh my God. Wait, but my question is, because I know your son, he's been playing a lot of PlayStation 4. Has he seen this game yet, or has he tried it out at least for a little bit?
Oh, yeah, I guess I should have brought him into it. He's played it. Actually, I don't know what he thinks, but he has played it.
Okay. I mean, he's addicted to Destiny, so it's going to be hard to take him away from that.
We've been rolling through the new Destiny content, so that's been the majority of it. But, yeah, he checks it out for a little bit. But I'm curious what he thinks. I should go on mute and ask him right now. So continue, please.
All right, so Patrick, we have a review for this week, right?
We do. Talking Dark Souls 3, man. It's finally out. Everyone was really looking forward to it. It had a strong presence at E3 last year. I was really excited when I got to check it out at PlayStation Experience last December as well. But it's finally in everyone's hands. PlayStation 4, Xbox One, PC. Code was provided for me for review purposes for the PC version, so I reviewed it on PC. But yeah, let's get right into it. I recorded a nice little short audio review for Dark Souls 3, and we'll play that right now.
This is Gamer Tag Radio. Voicemail 786-2737-GTR.
Hey, what's up, Gamer Tag Radio? Patrick here, aka Boston J, and man, have I got a big review for you guys this week. This time we're talking about Dark Souls 3 from Software's highly anticipated new action RPG for Xbox One, PlayStation 4, and Windows PC. For review purposes, I played and reviewed this game on PC. So first things first, this is a Souls game, of course. So if you played Demon's Souls, Dark Souls, or even PlayStation 4's excellent Bloodborne, you already have an expectation of what you're getting into here with Dark Souls 3. But for you newcomers out there, let me break it down for you real quick. In Dark Souls 3, you play as one of the Unkindled, which is an ancient race of long-dead warriors risen from their graves to help stop the coming apocalypse. The Lords of Cinder have all left their thrones, so it's up to you to seek them out, slay them, and return their essence to feed the eternal fire and prevent the world from coming to an end. So when you first start off in Dark Souls 3, you make your own character, either male or female. There's actually a very robust character creation system here that I had a lot of fun playing around with, and it actually features the most amount of customization this series has had to date. So there's a lot of tools here for you to create your own personal hero that stands out from the crowd. From there, then you're going to pick one of 10 classes. And the class system is one of the key components that makes Dark Souls 3 so unique, and in my opinion, so much fun, is because every one of the 10 classes plays vastly different from each other. For example, I played as the Knight, which is the heavily armored warrior, using the sword, using the shield, standing there, blocking attacks and retaliating right there in the thick of things. But you can also choose to be a quicker character as well, such as a thief or an assassin who has to focus on getting in behind enemies, dodging their attacks, and doing a lot of damage up close. You also have the ability to be a magic user as well, such as a pyromancer or a sorcerer or a cleric, focuses on using ranged damaging spells from a distance, but is very vulnerable up close. So you can already tell off the bat that there's a lot of variation here, but it goes even further because the class you pick at the beginning of the game will strongly define your experience for the length of the experience from start to finish because of how distinctively the classes play from each other. So one person's experience as a knight will be very different from another person's experiences playing as a sorcerer. And that's what makes this game so much fun off the bat, is you already have a predetermined pathway set up for you based around what type of combat you like to play. So from there, let's jump right into the combat. That's the meat of experience, of course. This is one of the most fun action RPGs I have ever played, and I'm including how much fun I had playing Bloodborne. This, I think, took all the great ideas from the original Demon's Souls and the Dark Souls, combined with the fluidity of the combat in Bloodborne, makes Dark Souls 3 such a great game, in my opinion. It's because it has all of the trappings that you expect from the Souls series, such as the concept of defeating enemies, getting the souls, using those either as the level up or as a currency to buy new items. And of course, if you die and can't get back to where you respawned and where you died originally, then you lose all those souls. So the sense of regression is still there. That sense of wanting to get over the next hill, save those souls, and come back stronger is still present in the game. But the combat system around it is so much more fluid and enjoyable than it has been in the past games. So for me, this is now the definitive starting point for the Souls series. And even though I said that in my Bloodborne review last year, I think Dark Souls 3 accomplishes what Bloodborne set out to do even better, which is structure a really good, fast, fluid combat system on top of an excellent RPG narrative, world building, and stats to combine to make this overall extremely pleasing experience set in this dark dystopian world. So don't get me wrong, this is still a very hard game. You are going to die a lot, very many times, but you'll learn from your mistakes, you'll learn what you're doing wrong, and how to overcome that. So when you do defeat that tough enemy that's given you so much trouble for like an hour or two, the sense of joy is so real. I mean, this is why we play games, that sense of challenge and accomplishment. So Dark Souls 3 nails that completely. So on the other side of the coin here, you have the single player experience I just described, but you also have a completely separate online component as well that's completely optional. So you can play the game start to finish by yourself if you want that true challenge, but I recommend playing online because this is where the game gets interesting. Like in previous Souls games, you have two aspects of the online. You have the cooperative play, and you have the PvP as well. We'll start with the cooperative play. The cooperative play can be activated in two ways. You can either become the host by using an item called an Ember, which basically boosts your health and then basically sets you up as a matchmaking server for other players. So other players around the world, as guests, use this item called a white sign, write their name on the ground anywhere in the world. So once you as the host activate that Ember, you can now see these names on the ground that you can examine, see the name and profile picture of the character that's asking to be in your world, and choose who you want to invite. So at any time, it's drop in, drop out. It won't affect your experience, and anyone that's already looking for a match can quickly hop into yours and vice versa. And the loading times are very fast as well. I was surprised at how quickly and efficiently this worked from the start. So the co-op is set up so you can have two buddies who are designated as phantoms on your team. And you can use this to get past typical sections of the game, of course, to deal with those really tough boss battles the game is infamous for. The co-op is always there to help you out, but it's never a hindrance. It's never forced on you. It's always optional. And, you know, to be frank, it's a lot of fun. I prefer the game in the cooperative aspect, but of course, many people enjoy this traditional single player aspect as well. On the other side of the coin here, you have the PvP aspect, which is set up where either you can invade other people's worlds as an antagonist, or because if you activated the Ember to be a host for your world, people can all of a sudden invade your world as well. So you have to defeat these guys. You get a lot of rewards for defeating them, and vice versa. You invade someone else's world, take them out. You're going to get a lot of experience, souls, and items for doing that. So it creates this real sense of danger in the world. And what I like about Dark Souls 2 as well is it adds these factions, if you will. So you have different factions besides the standard, you know, Red Invader, white co-op partner. For instance, you can be a Mad Phantom, which is a purple color, which allows you to attack anybody, even people's worlds where you're supposed to be on their side, enemy invaders. It creates this weird, mysterious element to the game that really just throws off what your sense of safe and unsafe is, because it always keeps the world dangerous. So again, I think this is why this game should be played online with the Ember on as much as possible, because once you activate the Ember as the host, it will stay on until you die. So ideally, if you're playing well, you keep the online experience fluid, natural. You're always getting new friends, jumping into your games, fighting new enemies, and just having a really enjoyable time. So what Dark Souls 3 manages to accomplish is to combine an incredibly fun but technically excellent combat system on top of a wonderful RPG world and narrative that builds itself around you. There's no cutscenes handing you exposition on a platter. The world is unveiled to you and the plot as you progress through and slay these monsters from your nightmares and become the ultimate hero to save the world. Again, you know, it really is one of the most fun games I've played so far this year. I cannot recommend it highly enough. If you have a PlayStation 4, an Xbox One, or Windows PC, and even have an inkling to try one of these games, I strongly recommend you pick this up. You Souls fans out there, I don't even need to sell this to you. This is exactly what you've wanted. This is, in my opinion, the perfection of the Souls formula. And again, one of the best games I have played so far this year. And with that, I'll pass it back to the crew with any questions. All right, thanks.
Voicemail 786-2737-GTR.
All right, so we're back here. And any questions you guys have for Patrick about Dark Souls?
Which do you consider harder, Dark Souls 3 or Bloodborne?
So far, Bloodborne is still harder because I got at least halfway through that game where I hit the brick wall of difficulty. I had a moment in Dark Souls 3 that I thought was impassable because it wanted me to, as I said in the review, you can do co-op at any time. I should retract that a bit because there are certain segments like puzzle rooms that you can only go in by yourself, and some of those have really difficult enemies in them. So I did struggle at one of those enemies for a while before I managed to figure out the attack pattern and take him out. And then, of course, that was the one thing holding me back to get to the next area. So the sense of accomplishment is there, as it always has, but I feel like Dark Souls 3 is a bit more fair with structuring and pacing than Bloodborne, because Bloodborne had a lot of instances where like you could accidentally be teleported to a high level area and you wouldn't know until it's too late. And if you couldn't fight your way out of it, you were stuck in it. That's what happened to me in Bloodborne. Dark Souls, I hadn't that problem. It's a much better job of slowly pushing you through all the levels. You know, it doesn't hold your hand. There's no map to look at it or anything, but you can naturally kind of fight your way, tell which path it wants you to lead you to. And just that whole sense of you're driving the story. No one's telling you to go anywhere. No big, floating yellow objective marker saying, hey, go here, do this. It's all based on your sense of exploration, discovery. So I think Dark Souls 3 does that better than Bloodborne. So I'd say Dark Souls is a slightly easier game in terms of navigation, but the combat is still just as difficult as you would imagine from these games. But I think the combat is, as in the review, is a bit better than Bloodborne, because you could tell they learned a lot from what they did in Bloodborne, combine that with what worked in Dark Souls and Demon Souls to, kind of make this ultimate little Souls package that is Dark Souls 3. So a bit easier, but more fun and more accessible, I would say, than Bloodborne.
Nice. Right on.
Yeah. That's cool. It was it smooth for the PC?
Yeah, rock solid. 60 frames per second. The game is gorgeous visually. The landscapes and vistas. I mean, you would swear this was stuff that used to be painted on Final Fantasies back in the day, but it's all rendered in the background. A lot of the places you can see, you can traverse to. It's really a gorgeous game. I think I'm in the fourth or fifth area now, and it always keeps changing the scenery. You never know where you're going to go next. So that sense of like wonderment is always pushing you forward. It's never a sense of like, oh, I have to get past this. Oh, I got to get to the next cutscene. It's no, you're being driven by your experience because everything is based around you. And the plot, is there. You have to go seek it out, though. And I really enjoy that. And supposed to, a lot of the RPGs out there where you spend the majority of time in your quest journal looking at a map, trying to figure out what you should be doing at any given time. This is all about what you want to do, what your experience is like. And again, have fun, survive, get stronger, go back, tackle a challenge you couldn't beat before. And again, the sense of accomplishment in this game is one of the best I've ever experienced in a video game. Certainly this year, it's a really, really satisfying because you feel yourself getting better at the game. And that's something that a lot of games just don't even manage to do anymore. You're going through the paces of the same old skill set over and over again. But I feel like, every single turn I take in Dark Souls could get me killed. So I'm always on guard. I'm always sweating a little bit. You have to rub my palms on my pants to get the sweat off the controller, but it's excellent. And I was using the Xbox One controller as well on PC, which works very, very well.
Wait, the X You said Xbox One?
Yeah, I used Xbox One controller connected to my Steam version of Dark Souls 3. So that works excellently. I tried out mouse and keyboard for a little bit. I don't recommend it. So definitely controller is the way to go for this game, regardless of what platform you pick it up on.
All right, that's cool. All right, so the next topic, you know, it was a sad day for Paris. Paris, one of your favorite basketball players, retired. That's it. Kobe Bryant. Speaking of Kobe Bryant, he's going to be on the cover of NBA 2K17. You know, we'd like to talk about that very quick. I know you're a big Lakers fan.
Yeah, let me say this. Look, the NBA 2K thing, who cares, right? But
this is about Kobe and his legacy.
No, but here's the thing. I legit wasn't going to watch that game because I had watched that Nike commercial that he did, you know, with the hater thing. And I don't think I want to see Kobe go out. But it was so funny because the joke has been, I'm pretty sure we talked about a little too in the chat, is Kobe's going to go out shooting. And I was like, he'll probably shoot it 50 times. I like jokingly was saying this. And then sure enough, you know, Twitter's going crazy. So I jumped in and start watching the game. And I'm like, Kobe's going out the only way Kobe could go out. And the fact that he dropped 60 points on 50 shots. Forget the shots. Just the fact that his last game, he scored 60 points and walked off like a G. You know, it just, hey, you can love Kobe, hate Kobe. It doesn't matter. But no one's ever going to go out like that again. I can't see that being duplicated. Just can't. Especially the fact that Kobe's obviously regressed big time. But he stored up enough energy for that one final game to run it out only the way Kobe could do. And the fact that his final NBA statistic was an assist just says it all.
Hey, he had four in the game. That's unheard of.
Yeah, that's crazy. And the fact that he can laugh at himself in his post-game speech and is like, for years, everybody telling me to pass the ball. Last game, they're telling me to shoot it. It's like, make up your mind, you know. But for me, me as a Laker fan, the biggest thing I took out of that wasn't the 60 points, all that, you know, celebrating Kobe. You know what made me smile the most was before the game and after the game, Shaq and Kobe had a genuine embrace. Like, we're good. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't fake. It wasn't forced. It's like, we're good. You know, and Shaq even had a quote in there where I guess he had told Kobe before the game, he was like, I want you to go out there and try and score 50. And he was like, this MF wind up scoring 60. You know, it was like he was genuinely rooting for Kobe to do well in that final game. So, yeah, I loved it, man. It's the end of an era for the purple and gold. So, I mean, we're at rock bottom. Now it's time to build it back up. You know,
hey, I'll give him credit where credit's due. Like, as an NBA fan, and more so, you know, Miami Heat fan, obviously, I wasn't a Kobe fan, but I appreciate what he did for the game. He definitely transcended the sport, especially especially with Michael Jordan stepping away, him coming up as the next face of the league, not the franchise, face of the league, right? And, you know, it's been 20 years since somebody hit the best record of all time, right? So he sat there in the middle of all of that. Obviously, 5 rings. It's definitely an end of an era. God bless him, dude. He went out, like you said, on his own. I will say, I don't know if there will. I mean, everybody says, okay, you know, that's, you know, LeBron is the next greatest player. I don't know if I could put another person on that top pedestal like Jordan besides Kobe. You know what I mean? Those are the only two that I can honestly say I've watched them play. I've followed them. Those are the two, in my personal opinion, that has to sit on that pedestal as top one and two. Personally, I'm still going to go Jordan all day, but Kobe's right there.
He's
Jordan 2.0. Yeah. He had that killer instinct. He could play the defense. God knows he had the offensive skills. And, you know, he's got the rings to talk. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll say a couple of things on this and I'll shut up. But, you know, Jalen Rose said it best that, you know, Michael Jordan is the original, but Kobe Bryant is the remix. Because he is. as we sit here today in 2016, he is the second best shooting guard in NBA history behind Michael Jordan. He's the closest we'll ever get to Air Jordan. I mean, Steph Curry, Bron, they're great players, but they're Dwayne different Wade players. Yeah, we'll talk about that another day. I might argue Jerry West, but that's for another day. But the point is, you know, through like I literally got to watch it all 20 years. I was here, Laker fan, 96. I basically moved to San Diego and became a Laker fan, 96, and watched it from the beginning until the very end. So, like, I've seen the highs. Think about it. The highs, the lows, the scandals, everything that happened in these 20 years. I mean, I literally got to watch Kobe Bryant go from a 17-year-old kid to a grown-ass man going out, scoring 60 points and walking off, you know, with his family there with him, his two daughters and his wife, you know. So it's special as a fan of the game. It's special to say that I was there for all of it, and I'll be able to remember all of it and tell my kids about it, and the grandkids and all that. Yeah. Oh yeah. I remember when Kobe played, I remember, you know, this and that and the other. And like, I got to actually see him play live, you know, going to Staples Center and watching Laker game. So it's, look, like I said, it's the end of an era, man. It really is. And then I'll just shut up about it. I actually talked about Kobe and Shaq and them being the greatest duo in NBA history on other podcasts I do called Two Big Topics. It was like the first episode we ever did, which is ironic because now a lot of stuff that I said on there has kind of come to fruition. So if anyone's interested in that, they can go check that out too at Two Big Topics.
So obviously, guys, E3 is right around the corner. A lot of big games are going to be announced, possibly even new hardware from Nintendo. So you need to be able to save some money now. So obviously financial future is important. This is where LearnVest comes into play. LearnVest is an online financial advice company that is dedicated to empowering you, people like you nationwide, to make smart decisions about your money and to help prepare for your financial future. So that includes things like paying off your student loans, you know, getting ready to pay mortgages down, setting up a retirement account, a savings account. LearnVest has specialized certified financial planners available 24/7, available to help you plan for your better financial future. So what we have right now is a great special just for you guys. If you guys go to learnvest.com/GTR, you can set up your own custom financial planning system with a sample plan, and that'll get you a $50 credit when you go to learnvest.com/GTR. That's going to get you a couple of things. Not only is it going to get you a dedicated financial planner available 24/7 a day, it's going to get you your own online tools set up to help you make better financial decisions. Classes, articles, lots of information, things they don't teach you in school, and things you need to know to set your future on the right path. So if you need to make better financial decisions about the future, you need to check out learnvest.com/GTR. You can check out a sample plan, and again, you'll get a $50 credit. This is just for GTR listeners when you go to learnvest.com/GTR.
You were listening to Gamertag Radio.
So I know the last episode we talked about a lot about Gears of War 4, and you know, today I've been going back and forth with the crew topics and stuff, and I noticed that Patrick and Paris, once again, they've been sending cool topics, and the one that I noticed there was the most was about Gears, some new information about Gears. So Patrick, let's start with you. What are the stuff that you've been finding about Gears 4?
Yeah, so actually GameSpot did a really cool interview with Rod Ferguson and Ryan Cleven, you know, two of the head guys working at the Coalition now to make Gears 4 a reality. And basically the conversation came down to, you know, what have you guys learned from the previous Gears experience? You know, obviously the Judgment was a spinoff of the series. Are we going to see a return to a form to what made Gears special? So basically it was a back and forth, and Rod and Ryan were describing that, you know, yes, we learned a lot of things from Judgment, but for us, we wanted to take what we accomplished in Gears 3 and then add on to that and say, you know, what can we do to transition this into, you know, a real force? Because obviously if you didn't know the story, Gears War 1 was 90% completed. That last 10% was the multiplayer that was added the last minute, almost as like a decision, like, you know, people even want this. Turns out it was a very big deal. People loved it. But it turns out Gears the developers did not want people playing the game as they ended up playing it. So the competitive scene took off in one direction, and they took the series Gears 2 and 3 in a completely different direction as well. So they're having to balance that between the hardcore fans who want to play the game one way and Epic, who's trying to structure the game to be, you know, a larger experience that caters to more people than just the hardcore right now. So a couple of things for me was interesting about this article. One of the key things they said is that the focus here is on the multiplayer. And even though they had a great story system, you know, with the story of Dom and Marcus and all of them, the journey from Gears 1 to 3, they said that's not their focus anymore with Gears 4. They're dialing back the seriousness in Gears 4, and they want to make sure it's a fun game, most importantly, on top of that. And so that was where they're putting their strength into the multiplayer field. They do think it's poised to offer something that's not available right now on the Xbox One, so they think they have a path to something really good. So it's just surprising to me to hear from their point of view of, you know, how they interpreted how the community adapted the original Gears game into 2, into 3, and what sorts of feedback they're taking for Gears 4, because, I mean, there's a lot of voices crying out there of what they want Gears 4 to be. Some people want it to be more like 1, some people enjoy what they do in 3, and some people want something entirely different as well. So it seems like from this interview, they're mostly aiming towards that Gear 3 market of a starting point, and they're going to add new features and focuses on top of that. Because one of the things is, like, you know, they don't like those instances where people are like rolling around too much. They're in cover right next to each other. Those awkward moments where you're just not hitting shots. They're trying to reduce that and bring the game to have that visceral execution feel that the game was always targeted to have from the beginning. On top of that, Paris, if you want to bring it up, there's also the mention of microtransactions as well. Do you want to expand on that?
So yeah, Gears 4 with the microtransactions, just from what, and again, this is all coming from the GameSpot stuff that you were talking about before, Patrick, but it sounds like they aren't even trying to call them microtransactions because they know that scares people off, but these are cosmetic items, and they also had these in like the Gears of War Ultimate Edition, and I guess were they in Judgment or Gears 3 or something too, I thought I was reading. But the point is, these aren't like pay-to-win items. These are just cosmetic items if you want to change the way that your gear looks while you're playing in Gears of War. But the one interesting thing that I saw out of that was with the DLC, as far as the way they're going to handle the maps, they're going to have a rotation of maps that you can get for free to play, but they'll come in and out on a rotation. So you won't have them every month. What'll happen is, if you want to keep these maps static so that you can play with your friends all the time, you'll need to actually buy the maps to play them in custom games. I think that's an interesting approach to it. They're basically giving you the best of both worlds. If you're just simply just being competitive and want to go against different people all the time, you can just play the normal map rotations and you'll be fine and you'll get the maps for free. But if you got a circle of buddies that, like, every Friday night you guys want to get together and play Gears, and you have like some favorite maps that you guys always want to play, you're going to have to actually start buying some of these DLC maps. So I think it's fair. I'm actually okay with that.
So it's kind of like following the Killer Instinct trend, yeah, where you get free maps and you get, you know, other characters, but they rotate. So you're not always playing the same. So it actually gives you more variety because you're never stuck on a static experience. Mm-hmm. But if you like that and you want to keep those other things, you know, obviously because you're playing in a clan or you're playing with other people regularly, then yeah, you'll want more options, so you'll pay for it. That's actually a pretty sound approach to it. I like it.
Yeah,
I like it too.
Yeah, it's smart because you got to think most of the non-hardcore people are not going to get the season pass day one. They're not going to sure they're going to be sticking around long term. So by letting these people try out these maps as they're released, you know, that's the only way that marketing is going to get through to people, because you can, you know, put up pretty videos on YouTube and describe it and have walkthroughs all day long. But until you set foot in that map and realize, oh, I really like this design, or oh, I really like these spawn points, these weapon placements, you're never going to know until you try it. So yeah, this is a smart method. I mean, this is definitely the trend I think we're going to see moving forward. Obviously, games like League of Legends and Heroes of the Storm, MOBAs, popularize this idea of having like a weekly cycle. This one's obviously going to be monthly, so you have more time to get attached to these maps. I believe I read that it was 10 maps they're going to have at launch. So I'm curious to know, how many maps are we going to get? You know, they say one new map each month for a year, so 12 maps. Are they all going to be symmetrical, asymmetrical? Are some going to be specialized for the Horde mode, or is it going to be like in the previous games where like one map can be used for multiple game types? A lot of questions in my mind what they'll do for the cooperative aspect, because obviously people love Horde mode. They want it to return. They've confirmed that it's coming back. We just don't know when, what stage it's going to be. And then, of course, competitive multiplayer is, you know, could be anyone's guess at this point what they're doing, because really the the field is wide open for him at this point. It's been a while since we've had a Gears game. Ultimate Edition has enjoyed some, pretty popular success last year on Xbox One and the Windows 10 version as well. So I think people are ready for new Gears. Definitely, I know I am. So I'm really excited. I'm really looking forward to this beta as well. You know, it's right around the corner, and hopefully I can get my hands on it really, really soon and, give you guys some impressions, hopefully in the near future.
Yeah, definitely. Like, the thing is, I'm wondering is if they're taking this story less seriously.
Yeah, but that trailer was so weird though, right? Because
What I'm saying. I was going to mention about the trailer. Like, even bother showing that trailer? Because looking at that trailer for the first time, it looks like it's going to be like a very serious story or something like that, right? So I'm confused where they're taking that part, like that area around the game. Like, is it maybe just for the commercial and the story is not going to be?
I hope it's not a bait and switch. All? Yeah, that would be
bad. I don't like that, because they've done. Because I know there's been games like that, which I know Paris complained about that. How they were promoting Halo, the last Halo game.
That's what I was going to bring up. Yep.
So
bait and switch.
That's not cool.
Wow. I've given me pause to consider on this. Yeah, Danny, good call on bringing that up. Yeah, the trailer was definitely a pretty darkly emotional, short little minute trailer. Maybe that's just in the cutscenes and the gameplay is all going to be a roller coaster ride. I have no idea. But all I know is, I kind of want it to be predominantly nighttime / survival horror. I know, obviously, in the GameSpot interview, they did use the words, hey, we're not survival horror. We're still a shooter. But I think that was kind of one of the key elements of why First Gears War was so successful, is the Unreal Engine 3 plus that lighting plus that environment really made the game pop. And I will hope they follow that. I don't want the oversaturated, bright, popping colors that Gears 3 was so popular for. I kind of want my darker game. But again, as long as it's fun, that's really the only thing that
that's
care about.
Fine. Yeah. That part is fine. It's just I just don't like when companies do that.
Yes.
The crowd think it's going to be a certain way. Yeah.
Look. Let's just get back to the great story that was in Gears 1.
I was waiting for that.
Only Paris. Only Paris.
The Citizen Kane of our times.
But it was a great... I don't know. We'll see. Hey, guys, please let us know your feedback, your thoughts about all this. And if you're getting the beta, which is coming out very, very soon by the time you hear this, let us know. Give us a call, 786-273-7GTR, or email us fanmail@gamertagradio.com. And if you would like to listen to the past episodes of GTR, go to gamertagradio.com or play.it/gamertag. So pretty cool stuff. Thursday, Paris, should we announce what we're going to have on Thursday?
Yeah, let's do it.
Go for it.
Well, I was listening to Podcast Unlock, which is IGN Xbox podcast. I listen to them almost every week, and I'm hearing them on there talking, and they were bringing up about E3, and they were just talking about some of the changes at E3, and they were just talking about how next year is probably going to be a pivotal moment of E3 is going to make or break it. They were bringing up things like maybe E3 should be more like Gamescom and start letting the public in on the weekends, things like that. And I'm like, I think we actually talked about that on this podcast as well. So I'm literally in my car listening to this, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to tweet at Ryan McCaffrey and ask him to come on the show so we can just extend this conversation, get the IGN point of view on E3, what they're looking forward to. And then again, obviously, with them being Podcast Unlocked, trying to see what their thoughts are on Xbox and Windows 10 and where they think Microsoft is going to go moving forward. So reached out to Ryan McCaffrey and he agreed, and he's going to be on the podcast on the next episode. So I'm really excited about that, because I've been a big fan for a long time, going way back to the OXM days. Matter of fact, I even remember when he was on Gamertag Radio years ago. I remember listening to that.
9 years ago.
Yeah, crazy.
Exactly. Yeah, it was on episode 88. So if you go to TuneIn Radio and you search Gamertag Radio episode 88, you will find it there. And yeah, we talked about... It's crazy. I was listening to it today, and we were talking about, now that we could download demos on Xbox Live through Xbox 360, why we even need the demo disc anymore? Because that's at the time that he was working on OXM, and we had a long conversation about that. And then he mentioned about the Final Fantasy online demo that came out in the magazine. We talked about that, too. It was a long time ago. 9 years ago, guys. 9 years ago. So yeah, I can't wait. It's gonna be cool, man. It's gonna be fun. We always see him at different events, you know, especially E3, I see him all the time. Like, so it's going to be really cool having him on the show once again. So anything else, guys, would like to say before we wrap it up? Or are we good?
Killing Joke, rated R.
Oh. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Oh. I'm out.
That's it.
That's all I need to say.
That's all you need to say.
We're getting
that's all you need to
a
say.
Real Batman animated film, man. That's I'm excited. I'm so pumped, Pete.
That's gonna be good. That's gonna be really, really good.
Yeah, looking forward
Paris,
to it.
You were gonna say something, right?
Oh no, I just want to give a couple shout outs real quick, and I'm sorry, Pete, because I know it, you know, puts you to sleep and everything, but just give a shout out to Mark over at Guardian Radio and Pope Bear over at Planet Destiny. Thank you for the shout out on the podcast last week, Mark, and I'm gonna be getting together with those guys with my son, and we're probably gonna be streaming some Destiny together, and who knows what else. So just putting it out there. I know it puts people to sleep, but that's what I'm doing. Okay.
Let me go get my Z quiet real quick.
Yeah. Get your Z quiet. No, but jokes aside, I mean, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. And like I said, it'd probably be streaming. So if that does happen, I'll make sure to put that information out there, so anyone interested can check it out.
Awesome. All right. Until next time. See you this Thursday. Peace. We out. Later.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week.